Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. You say baseball season, I say cesspool of COVID. Let's call the whole thing off. How's it going?
Hey, we at least we got like four games
of baseball. Yeah. It seemed like all of which were national casts and not Oral and Joe, which was a bummer.
It was rough. And I will say this, the Dodgers at the moment are tied for the most wins in the majors. They've played one more game than almost everybody. But in fact, they only the Giants have also played four games. So like, yeah, but whatever. Like, we don't need to nitpick. I just, you know, and under the current playoff format,
this is a podcast. We don't nitpick on podcasts.
They're still in. So like, yeah. Hey, we got it in. Like, we're good. I think we saw enough baseball for 2020. So yeah, there it is.
Clearly some news come out that jeopardizes, I think is the term that I saw used 8 billion times, the baseball season. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about opening weekend and what we thought of the last three games since we talked about the first game, and kind of just recap the news that we did go over on Thursday last week. We have a Dodgers rewind, one I'm very excited for. We have questions from Craig, all that after this. Before we get started, I will mention that I am exhausted from being a new dad. So if I'm especially off today, listeners, I apologize.
And I might be a little off as well, just because to quote Stained, it's been a while for me. Like I literally had not recapped a game in like 2 years. And because I was, you know, doing national stuff for a while, and it was like mid-2018 when I stopped doing True Blue LA. And like I was like paying attention to like two teams over the last like 4 days. And after like 4 months of not baseball, like that was like, look, and again, not complaining here by any means, but it's just like that was a transition, man. Like it was like we spent like 3 or 4 months trying to figure out stuff to write about because there wasn't really much news. And then now it's like everything all at once. And like, so yeah, it was a weird weekend. Plus they played a 7 o'clock, Pacific time night game on Sunday. I know that's every week for the East Coast. Whoever has the ESPN game is a normal 7 o'clock. It used to be 8 o'clock. So I get it. I never understand how East Coast fans function anyway for late games, but yeah, it's weird. It was a weird weekend, but it got weirder. And like not really Dodgers related except in like the old friend variety. So the major news like Monday morning, it actually started Sunday morning. I believe, I don't remember the exact timeline. One player on the Marlins tested positive either Friday or Saturday. And then they got news like Sunday morning that three more players tested positive. So they got four players positive. And then, I don't know if we actually know the names of the players just yet, who all of the Marlins who were affected, but you know, per protocol, they were like, they're out, they're quarantined. And, there was still like this window of time where like whether they play. And so you have to figure out like there's contact tracing because it's not just the players who were affected. You have everyone on the team who interacted with them and like just, you know, you're in a team, even though as socially distanced as you can be, it's still hard. Like that's the whole point of the danger of all this is like trying to figure out how to not spread it. And, but they decided to play somehow on Sunday still with, I believe, the quotes like Sunday night were something to the effect like epidemiologists were saying this is technically an outbreak, even with the four plus, I believe it was, oh no, at that time it was just four players. But this is from Ken Rosenthal and Jason Stark at The Athletic. This is where it gets the old friend portion. Marlins manager Don Mattingly said his team never really considered not playing on Sunday. The club's most respected veteran, shortstop Miguel Rojas, another old friend, told the media afterward that all 30 players discussed the situation Sunday morning, but said not playing was, quote, never our mentality. Like, so we're just trying to like out tough the coronavirus? Is that like that? That's a weird like policy. Like that doesn't sound to me like following protocol. Like, I don't know. It was a weird framing of that. But we'll get to why that's sort of important. Like, okay. Also should point out this game was in Philadelphia, on Sunday. So come Monday morning, this was, before I woke up, about 6 a.m. Pacific time, seven more Marlins players and two coaches tested positive. So we're up to 11 of the 33 players on the road trip. The third of the team plus two coaches tested positive. So we're in full blown outbreak mode. So the Marlins game Monday and Tuesday, which was supposed to be at home against the Orioles, was canceled. The Yankees and Phillies, the Yankees were supposed to come to Philadelphia. They actually did go to Philadelphia. They're staying in a different hotel than the Marlins. But their game Monday was canceled. So now we're in like this, like what happened? And then I guess we still don't exactly know when the Marlins were infected. It could have been during the Braves series, which again brings into this like how quickly this can spread. Like, so now it's like, who are the Braves infecting if they're infected and all this stuff, and it can mushroom very quickly. I guess as it stands now, the Marlins are waiting on test results, which we'll probably get Tuesday morning before this podcast is released. Same with the Phillies, because I think the major thing is like, if we find out that a bunch of Phillies are now tested positive, then it becomes a huge problem. As of now, though, like, I don't know. The early morning was like, well, baseball's going to shut down. And then you find out as the day goes on, no, there's too much money at stake. The quotes are like, at times, like, it's just like very odd, but also very expected. I'll get to them in a second. But an epidemiologist from Emory University in Georgia, he suggested the Marlins shut down for 2 weeks and put the Phillies in probationary quarantine, what he called it, for 5 days. And then MLB's plan, as it stands now, is the Marlins and Orioles are playing home and home this week. So two games in Miami and then back to Baltimore for Wednesday, Thursday. As of now, I guess it depends on further test results, but as of now, the Orioles and Marlins are scheduled to play those games. So when seeing this, Zachary Binney, the epidemiologist at Emory University, his tweet was, "This is absolutely insane. This is, if possible, the literal stupidest possible plan." So, but it goes back to this too. Juan Soto on opening day, the morning of opening day Thursday, when there was only the two games, he had a positive test. Now, all Nationals were tested Thursday, but they didn't get results till Friday, Saturday. They also played Thursday against the Yankees anyway. So, like, none of them had tested positive before, so that was why they were cleared. This shows, like, the weirdness of, like, the testing every other day program, like, and how there could be delays, and then during those delays is how it spreads. We don't know. There's a lot of like nervousness about this, obviously. I think like Dave Martinez of the Nationals earlier today was asking about the Marlins. He said, look, honestly, I'm scared. This is bad. Like, yeah, you know, teams kind of all over were like, man, what do we do here? So the operations manual, it doesn't actually specify the number of tests that would classify as an outbreak or what it would take to shut the season down. So, like, I think it's intentionally vague in that regard. Like, you don't want to put a number out there because once you hit it, you're like, well, we have to shut down now. And I think they're going to do everything in their power to get the games in, as sort of macabre as that sounds. But I was planning to include a Stan Kasten quote from the day training camp opened anyway. And then he went in an interview on an MLB Network radio and gave an update a little bit. But there's the two quotes. So July 3rd. First day of summer camp at Dodger Stadium, Stan Kasten interviewed. We interviewed him, and he said, "This is his quote: so long that it doesn't go into an outbreak of any kind, and as long as we're able to have what I would call an acceptable level of incidence and proper and appropriate treatment of whatever arises, I think we're going to be okay." So, like, and again, that time he didn't give a number on what can be considered acceptable. So it's like, oh, okay, so this feels like more and more like Gladiator every day. Like, you know, so, but then today, it's this weird, like, Kasten on MLB Network Radio, it was interviewed, this is just an excerpt of it, but he said, my understanding from talking to other teams is that it's supposed to be business as usual, at least for every other team. So, like, again, they're not really changing anything other than, like, postponing a couple games today for now. And then Kasten again, hopefully this is the worst outbreak we have this season because it will teach us some things, but I do think we expected something like this at some point, and you're like, really? they kind of did, and it becomes obvious because, like, you know, when they said here's a 60-man player pool, obviously, like, all those players aren't on the 40-man roster, but if you just do the math, like, you're starting with 30, you're really a 26-man roster, but they basically created the ability to have available a second team, like, for, you know, like, if you look at it, like, in the most bizarre sense, like, now Manfred said in an interview on MLB Network on Monday that, like, in order to, like, cancel or, like, affect a team would have to be, like, decimated to the point where they're not competitive, and then he'd consider shutting a team down. He wasn't, again, not specific, but I think that's on purpose, like, to not paint yourself into a corner. David Price, who opted out of the season in July, he tweeted today and said, now we really get to see if MLB is going to put players' health first. Remember when Manfred said players' health was paramount, and he capitalized paramount? Part of the reason I'm home right now is because players' health wasn't being put first. I can see that hasn't changed. Now, Manfred was asked about this. He disagreed. He said, we absolutely put health and safety first, blah, 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 all the sort of, you know, vanilla sort of answer. But then he went and said something very weird, that postponing the two Marlins games Monday and Tuesday went above and beyond the protocol. So that's supposed to show that, like, they're really like into this. So it's very weird right now. Like, there's a lot of waiting. Like, I think it's pretty clear that the Marlins and Phillies shouldn't have played Sunday. Like, that, I think that was, you know, that's something, but, like, who knows? But then also you're worried, like, if a bunch of Phillies test positive, then it's going to get, like, bad, like, because then it's like spreading to more teams. And then the Yankees are, like, in Philadelphia wondering whether they're going to play. You have the Orioles, like, wondering when they're going to play the Marlins, if at all, this week and where. So, like, and then there's also the possibility of, like, if the Marlins are okay, they have to make up those two games somehow, and there's only, like, a finite number of off days. So this is weird. Like, I don't know. It's very bizarre. And then, like, the sort of, like, weird thing today, like, the Marlins claimed Justin Schaefer, a pitcher from the Reds, off waivers. And it's like, oh, man, poor guy. You know, like, hey, you were, you know, put on waivers, and then you're potentially off of a 40-man roster. So good news, Justin, you get to stay on a 40-man roster. You just have to go to a team that was just decimated and, you know, like, it's possibly the most dangerous work environment in the league. So I don't know. It's very weird. But again, it seems like as of now, like, the Dodgers – or not the Dodgers, the league – is just going to go forward as planned until, like, you know, they just, like, they're just kind of reacting to stuff as it happens. And there's the feeling that they keep touting the protocols, but, like, it seems like they're winging it.
If your protocols are, like, as you said, intentionally vague, it's a bad protocol. If you're putting players first, you come up with the number that is safety, and then you stick to it, and yes, that means you don't have no more wiggle room for capitalism, but that's okay. if you're playing players first, or, you know, you can just tell the truth and say you're just trying to make as much money as possible in a crappy situation without looking bad.
They also keep making the point that, like, the protocols are, like, a living document that they're continually updating, which on some level is great. You know, you're like adjusting as, you know, different guidelines or whatever, or as you learn things, like, but it's not to be like, well, let's change it to this so we can get away with this, you know? Like,
start with the number that's safe then, and then if that number changes due to safety reasons, you can change the number then. That's okay.
Well, and we talked about before how the LA and Washington, D.C. were the two, like, harshest locales that had like very strict quarantines in place for like folks who just came in contact with infected people. So like you didn't even have to test positive, but like you're basically out for 2 weeks. And like MLB like lobbied Washington D.C. for an exemption for players. It's like, no, that's not the point. Like the whole point of this is like, you know, being safety and following that the actual like health officials' guidelines. And like I understand that in different areas, like health guidelines have some for some reason become politicized, and so it's not. It might not be consistent in every place, but the fact is they are still like actual health officials making those decisions. And if you're just going to figure out a way to get around it, like what's the point, you know? So I don't know. That's the frustrating part, I think, of all this. But, and then, you know, the Dodgers, we're going to like experience this at least from their standpoint. They've been they've been at home for like a month, you know, 4 weeks roughly at Dodger Stadium. And now they just left today. They just arrived in Houston. They just tweeted something about arriving in Houston. And they have a 9-game road trip, 3 cities. So, like, and the protocols on the road are fairly strict. Like, you basically, you're not supposed to leave the hotel for, like, a non-essential reason. I talked Dylan Bundy on the Angels. The Angels were in Oakland over the weekend, and in one of his pregame, I think his pregame interview before the day before his start, he mentioned something like he's like a homebody anyway. But I think one of his quotes was, you know, it'd be nice to go like be able to go take a walk. And I was like, okay, if they're like holding people to that, like that's like something with teeth, right? Like that's cool. They're like going to the protocols do like outline this pretty well, but it doesn't outright like ban people from leaving. It's like more like teams should avoid having, you know, players leave. So it's like it's very like very vague again. And like, but I think for the most part players are gonna like they could just kind of have to stay in the hotel. And it's weird, but like I think that's where the damage can get done, obviously, because the more you go, the more people you're exposed to, you know, the worse it can go, come, you know, worse it can get inside the sport. And so, yeah, that's bad. So we'll see. I mean, obviously this we're learning as we go, just like baseball is, but that's sort of where we are now league wide. We had our first major like outbreak in the sport, but it seems like they're just like, oh, we're just going to keep going.
It really highlights every tweet or, you know, Reddit post or something like that, that I've seen really highlights the sort of tension that I know really intense baseball fans are going under. It's both this very superficial but joy of getting to listen to and watch baseball again, but contrasted with probably stronger emotions of this season really shouldn't be happening. This thing I'm getting joy of probably shouldn't be occurring. It's not safe. It's not demonstrating appropriately to the country the severity of the situation, probably, on a lot of levels. Like, you know, there are, because there's no fans in the state. There's all that weirdness kind of communicates that. But it's weird being a baseball fan.
There is another thing where I think some teams generally over the first weekend were like a little bit lax in like in-game, you know, guidelines like social distancing and or not wearing masks in the dugout, or some teams were high-fiving. Lots of teams were spitting. I understand spitting. Like, that's, you know, that's probably the toughest thing to, like, avoid or to stop doing, I guess. But, like, everything about this season, like, is – or there's so many things about the season that are so unnatural to actual like baseball that like it's very odd, but at the same time it's a reminder like, oh, they're forcing this one in. So like, yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Well, some baseball did take place.
Did it?
I listened to or watched, I think, every game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that included the last two games. The two that I really watched sort of intently while watching my daughter, the game two, Melissa was taking care of her and I was elsewhere. So she got to watch true Dodger baseball, losing in unlucky, like both bum baseball, right? This is bum baseball. A little bit of bad luck, a lot of bit of silly little mistakes, frustratingly close losses. That's Dodger baseball.
On Saturday, like that was such a weird game. There were, I lost count of how many times they were doubled off on the bases. Like it was like hilariously bad at some point. But then, like, at the same time, like, they ended up losing by a run. They came back late. Will Smith down two in the ninth. He homered, and he nearly decapitated one of the cutouts. Like, it was hilarious. And then the guy reached out to him on Twitter, like, and actually Blake Harris on True Blue LA. He found that guy and interviewed him. It was pretty funny. So, yeah, like, it was a weird weekend. And then, okay, the other thing. So, we sort of joked about last episode. I joked about how Dodger Stadium hasn't been this quiet since Matt Stairs, mm-hmm. but like in generally, like it is like oddly quiet, and there's always like a buzz when a team's like struggling, right? You can feel like this growing angst among fans, like they're waiting to like explode. There's a nervousness that they're, especially in an important game, like if they're gonna, they're like, oh no, we're gonna lose. But like at least you feel that. But like a lot of times too, if a team starts rallying, the crowd gets into it. And with no crowd, there's not any of that. So, like, if you get Sunday's game, that was a 3-1 game where the Giants, like, tacked on single runs, two single runs late, but, like, it was all one-run rallies, all of them singles to left field for an RBI. And, like, the Dodgers, like, semi-threatened, but, like, there's no crowd getting into the rally. They're piping in noise. It's not the same. And, like, that's a weird thing. Like, you know, like there's no actual like home field advantage other than like the actual similarity of knowing the ballpark and things like that. But in terms of the gameplay, that's the weird part of it where it's just, you're just playing it out. And like, it's very odd. Like, so yeah, that was sort of the weird part. That's what sort of stuck out to me for Sunday's game. Also, there was a weird subplot. Mookie Betts was they kept hitting it to right field, and like he was at 8 putouts through 6 innings, and I guess the major league record for a right fielder for putouts in a 9-inning game is 11. Mm-hmm. So like I think he got to 9, but like he didn't. There was a brief moment where like, oh, I just hope every out goes to right field at this point, just to have this really bizarre record. So. Yeah, I don't know. I usually choose to ignore it, but like, oh yeah, like people just completely forget every year of baseball they've ever watched and overreact completely immediately. Yep. Like, how are they losing to these bums? They should have swept this. This is unacceptable. Really? Like, okay, like that's a mature like response to this weekend. I don't know. I guess I just like zone that out relatively easily, but like it was just sort of funny to like see that again. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a thing that people do. Like, that's kind of funny. There was a couple like sort of weird aspects of it. So with the DH, with no pitcher hitting, there's no easy choice to do like double switches. Yeah. And so,
love stupid roster stuff.
And so, like, you know, the Dodgers really haven't done much of anything yet. They've only used 3 pinch hitters in 4 games. Edwin Rios had 1 plate appearance in 4 games. Matt Beatty didn't play. Roberts was asked about it Sunday night, and he was like, no, he's healthy. Like, we'll figure out a way to get him in there. But, like, and then Terrence Gore played 1 defensive inning and didn't even get to run. Like, what are we doing? Like, why is he on the roster if you're not going to use him? But yeah, so it's weird. Like, so there's 9 games in 9 days on the road. So I figure just in terms of like getting people rest, you're going to utilize the roster more. But even though it's weird, because they had a 30-man roster, but in that opening series, it was essentially like a 27-man roster, almost the regular roster, the way they used it. So we'll see how that changes going forward. The other, I noted a couple highlights, but I didn't write this down, but I just wanted to point it out. So AJ Pollock missed Friday, Saturday. He was back in Arizona because his baby, who was born, I think, 3 months premature in March, they finally got to take her home from the hospital on Saturday. So that was wonderful. And she's, like, you know, healthy now. She was in the hospital for 128 days. So that's a wonderful story. Yeah, I'm really glad for them. That was a cool, very cool moment for him, AJ Pollock, and his wife, Kate. Yeah, and so Maddie Mae is his daughter's name, and seems to be a fighter, as they say. But yeah, that was a cool little moment. He doubled in Sunday's game. He was back in the lineup. But the other highlights, I guess, you didn't see much of Friday, which had most of the other highlights from non-opening day.
No, I saw.
Oh, you
my
did.
Daughter
okay.
did not. I did.
Oh,
though.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So Ross Stripling was awesome. Had the best start, I think, of the weekend. 7 innings, 1 run. He said he worked on his changeup. He got 5 swinging strikes out. He only threw it 19 times. So
also the only local game.
That's really. Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah. It was a weird weekend.
It was
in that regard.
It was a good game to watch.
It was the only game where announcers called the game from the booth at Dodger Stadium, like of the weekend. So even Saturday, which Joe Davis called, he called that game from the Fox studios in L.A. And A.J. Pierzynski was in Orlando. So, just a cool guy. So it also Max Muncy homered twice. I believe Mookie Betts is 3 for 20. I lost count. It's not. I don't know. It's funny. Like,
I guess, and you know, I have listened to half of the games instead of watching just because of national blockout stuff. He didn't seem lost at the plate. Kind of seemed like I was not that worried. Like I kind of want, you know, maybe a little bit harder hit balls. I wasn't looking up exit velocity or anything like that, but it didn't seem bad. It just seemed like 4 games.
Yeah, and it was generally fine. Like he had a couple hard hit things that didn't fall. Seager got kind of robbed a little bit on a lot of his hard hit stuff, but he almost injured like 2 or 3 different Giants outfielders on that they ended up catching in left field. Darren Ruff like opened the bullpen gate on his catch. That was kind of fun. The other thing I was going to mention, Cody Bellinger struggling as well, 4 for 17, but also hasn't struck out yet, so like, you know, whatever, he's fine. The other thing about Betts, and this is completely empirical, but like, and maybe it's just from watching him catch 9 putouts on Friday or on Sunday, but he just seems to get to everything. Like he's very smooth in like defensively in the outfield, and like it's kind of fun to watch, like even on routine stuff, or like, you know, he's not like struggling at the end of his range to like get to a ball. Like it seems like he has a pretty good beat on just about everything out there, and like I don't know, I kind of like that. Maybe it's just perhaps it's projecting or like I don't know what it is, but it's just you need to watch him play every day to appreciate him because he does a lot of awesome things, but like it is pretty cool to just watch him play the outfield so far, even if it's only a few games worth. So yeah, like it was, you know, generally pretty good. Justin Turner is really hot. He's 7 for 15, 4 doubles. So he's the 8th Dodger with to hit a double in each of the first 3 games of the season. I have a trivia question for you. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay.
Doing trivia while I'm this tired is just cruel. So
7 other people have doubled in the first 3 games for the Dodgers. How many of the 7 can you name?
I'm going to go over under of 1.5.
Okay.
All right, we're going to see what I hit after this. Name the first 7 Dodgers to hit to lead the season with a double in the first 3 games. And this is Brooklyn and LA.
Yeah. There's there's 3 players from Brooklyn.
Okay. All right. So let's see. You know, just to correct myself from last week, let's start with Zach Wheat.
No, sadly, no.
Okay. So I have a list of like 5 or 6 names. I'm going to say them, and however many I get, great. Yep. Mike Piazza.
No.
Duke Snyder.
No, but just to give you a hint, 2 people on this list were teammates. One of those guys had a teammate each on this list.
Eric Karras.
No.
Raul Mondesi.
Yes.
All right. All right. 1995. I have to find the Duke Snyder. Jackie Robinson.
Yes. 1950. Yeah. So we're already over. I'll give you one more hint. Another one is a Jacob era player. A currently active major leaguer.
Is he currently active Dodger? Cody Bellinger.
Nope.
Corey Seager.
Nope.
Am I done? Matt Kemp.
That is correct.
Hey,
Matt Kemp was the last one before Turner.
I seem to recall that. I was trying to think of like Dodgers that started hot in my era. One of whom I think is we're going to talk about in just a little bit. Yeah, and I think there might be a trivia question about that. but I did think of him if you were wondering. I don't think he's on. I don't think he's on this list, right?
No.
Okay.
So the others to get 3 doubles.
Yeah, I'm done. I'll tap out. I'll end on a correct guess.
Glenn Wright in 1932. You may remember him from being the other non-Corey Seager Dodger shortstop to hit 20 home runs as a shortstop. Wes Parker, 1968. He was a good doubles hitter. Ken Landreau, 1981. That was maybe a little surprising. I don't know. And then Tom Daley in 1901. How are you not guessing Tom Daley? Just shameful. another like good doubles hitter. The Dodgers don't. They have 150 double season. It was in I think it was 1929. I forget the exact year, but Johnny Frederick was the guy. They don't have a lot of 40 double seasons, right? Like one of the players who does have a 40 double season though is James Loney, and he's today's Dodger Rewind.
Hey, look at that!
I think he's the most. I have to look back at the list, but I think he's the most modern Dodgers Rewind we've done so far. And then part of it was like, do I really want to do something that soon? I'm like, yeah, why not? And then
Jamie
I looked like
Carroll, right?
Is that, yeah, that's true. But like, also
roughly the same.
Yeah,
I know not age wise, but
like, okay, there's 2 things. Like, he was traded 8 years ago. That seems so long. That's so long. Like, and then also he hasn't played in the major since 2016. So that's perfect time to rewind. Like that's great. So, just to give you a heads up for people who may not know, because there are like a generation of fans who probably have no idea who James Loney is, and that's fine. But he was part of the vaunted, like the Dodgers sort of rebuilt,
Jacksonville 5?
He was one of the Jacksonville 5. Logan White was the draft head for the Dodgers for a number of years. 2002, 2003, he had 2 great drafts in a row. James Loney was the first round pick in 2002. Jonathan Broxton was in the second round that year. Russell Martin was 17th. That draft also saw Eric Stoltz, Del Wynn Young, and James McDonald. In the next year, they had Billingsley Kemp and AJ Ellis, among others. So it was a very productive couple years for the Dodgers, bringing in actual drafted talent. The fun thing about Loney is that he was mostly scouted as a pitcher in high school as opposed to a hitter. I'm just from an interview in 2017 with MLB Trade Rumors. Logan White talked about this. He said Gib Boudet, our national cross checker, later went in to see Loney. He called me in and said, "Hey, Logan, this Loney kid has a chance to be a gold glove defender. He loved his defense. So we just kept doing our work. Chris and I remember being at a game later in the year. James wasn't pitching. He was only hitting, and there were no other scouts there. When James was pitching, there'd be 30 scouts or whatever. We knew we were probably one of the few teams in on him as a hitter." So Loney ended up obviously being drafted by the Dodgers as a hitter and as a first baseman. And that's where he played in the majors. He almost pitched in the majors once, and almost in a loose sense. Like, the Dodgers were really gassed at the end of a road trip in 2011. Plus, it was a series at Coors, which obviously taxed the pitchers. So, like, I don't know. Like, before a game, it was a Sunday game in 2011. Loney warmed up in the bullpen before the game because, like, there was a chance, like, if that game went bad, they were going to have to use a lot of people. So, like, it would have been awesome. We got robbed. But Billingsley ended up going eight innings in that game, robbing us of history. So I'm proactively mad at him for that, or retroactively mad at him for that.
He has pitched at Dodger Stadium at the celebrity game, right?
Oh, that's true.
The old timers game? Yeah.
Yeah, old timers game. And so Loney, he hit 380 in AAA in Las Vegas in 2006. I don't want to use the term blocked, because who knows if he was actually major league ready in 2006, like, to play a full year. But, like, Nomar was an all-star that year, so, like, you're not gonna bring up Loney to supplant him, so it was fine. But there was a lot of consternation that Loney wasn't up. But there was more consternation that, like, he was sent down to start, like, 2007. Or, 2007. He didn't get called up till June, but then it was pretty much for good. It's weird, like, so I think the thing with Loney, he started off, like, so hot early, like, in terms of the power, and then it never really, like, came to pass, really. He hit a career high 15 home runs in 2007, even though he only played a half a season. That September, he drove in 32 runs. It's the fourth highest total by an LA Dodger in any month. In 2006, in September at Coors Field, he drove in 9 runs with a 2-homer game. That ties the Dodger record. Also, Gil Hodges did it in 1950 in his 4-homer game. So in 2006 and 2007, in limited time in the majors, Loney hit 321, 372, 543. And that's a 132 OPS plus in 486 plate appearances. And then he slugged 397 the last 9 years of his career. So, yep. Like, that was the kind of thing. He just never really showed the power again. And, like, he was still, like, a regular, you know, with the Dodgers, and, like, batted, like, right in the middle of their order. He led them with 90 RBIs in 2008. And, like, I just distinctly remember Joe Torre using that as proof that he was actually productive when he kind of wasn't. Like, he was fine, like, generally, but, like, for a first baseman, especially in that era, it was not good, like, you know, whatever. But anyway, he was part of the infamous Punto trade in 2012, which we talked about, how that's been 8 years ago. It's crazy. But I just remember that was wild as it was becoming official, because, like, no one could really say anything because it wasn't official yet, but everyone involved was, like, scratched from the game. So Loney was supposed to start against the Marlins. And I remember we went up to ask him why he was pulled from the lineup, and Loney deadpan. He was really kind of quietly funny at times, but he said, "I don't have good numbers against Eovaldi. I'm 0 for 0. and he had, like, this grin on his face. I still remember that. It's very funny. Weirdly enough, he signed a 3-year, $21 million deal with the Rays and Andrew Friedman after that year, 2013. He was good, I'd say good for the first year, probably good for the second, and then not very good in the third year. But, like, he was generally fine over the course of his career. So he was a Dodgers regular first baseman for, like, 5 solid years, like, calendar years, parts of 6 seasons. He hit 284, 341, 423 with 71 homers, 173 doubles. He had 41 doubles 1 year. That's tied for the 8th most by a Dodger. It was a 105 OPS plus in his 7 years with the Dodgers. He had 8.7 war with the Dodgers, 11.3 war in his career. He has I almost asked you this trivia question. This probably would have been easier. But 4th most LA Dodger games at first base with 860. He ended up with more than Adrian Gonzalez, who was part of the trade that Loney went for. But Eric Caro, Steve Garvey, Wes Parker were the two ahead of him, or the 3 ahead of him, excuse me. Loney, though, in the postseason was great. Like, in the time he played in 08 and 09, 349, 414, 540 in 17 games. The defining moment was a grand slam in game 1. At Wrigley Field against Ryan Dempster in the 08 LDS. And they were down 2-0. And Dempster walked 3 guys. And then Loney hit a slam. And then they ended up winning that game. And then they swept the series. So that was, like, his defining moment. Now, getting to the trivia, as we always do. So James Loney had a 15-game hitting streak to start 08. That's the third longest for a Dodger to begin a season. Justin Turner the aforementioned hot start. He's currently at 4 games, so like long way to go. But my question to you is, who has the longest hitting streak to start a season by the Dodgers? By a Dodger, excuse me.
I'll go with my standard, it's a record holder answer, default answer, and say Eric Karros.
No, but Karros did have a 12-game hitting streak to start 95, tied for 6th longest.
Okay.
So, do you want a hint?
I will take a hint, but I'm blaming lack of sleep if it doesn't help out. Like your stupid Zach Weed hit.
Yeah. This one is baby food. No, this player played the same position as James Lenny.
Well, I already guessed Eric Karros. Steve Garvey.
That is correct.
Hey,
1978.
So I had him down on my, because I've been reading the trivia questions right before we go on air, just so I'm not completely dead. And
yeah.
He was on my list for that. The good thing about both these questions. Players who would have started a season on an opening roster who are consistently good but not necessarily home run hitters. There was a lot of overlap on my two guesses. So
yeah.
There you go.
And 21 games to start 1978. So good for him.
Well, I think it's after a week, it's time to return. Are you ready?
Yes.
It's time for...
With Gene and Craig. We love them.
5 questions. We'll have probably more than 5 answers because a lot of these have multiple parts, but we'll go for it. The first, leading things off, a 3-parter. See what I mean? With the first one being a trivia question for Eric, which means I have to get my cell phone out. Prior to Betts, there have been 4 American League MVP winners who later played for the LA Dodgers. Can Eric name them? Do you want the hint?
No, give me the hint because I saw this question ahead of time, only because when I was making the notes, like I just wrote who my guesses were, and I did use the hint, so that's fair.
So the hint is the first 3 played against the Dodgers in the World Series, 2 of those in their MVP season.
So that hint helped a great deal. I would have got, I believe, 1 on my own, maybe 2. But then the more I thought about it, I'm pretty sure I have all 4. So it's Moose Skourin, Zolio Versailles, Frank Robinson are the 3 MVPs. Wait a minute. I screwed myself. So Zolio Versailles, Frank Robinson. Oh, no, these are all MVPs. I was thinking the ones who played the Dodgers. So maybe I only got 3 or 4. So I know for sure Zolio Versailles, Frank Robinson, and Ricky Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm my Moose Skourin was my guess, so I'm sticking with that. But now I'm like wondering, I don't know. What I think I might have.
You're getting there. Moose is Ron. It's Boog Powell.
Boog Powell, of course. The Jim Tomei 20 years early. Yeah, or 30 years early, I guess. Yeah.
Follow-up. The last 2 parts are for both of us. Hey, I can answer. But that said, I really appreciate not asking me that trivia question. I actually might have gotten Frank Robinson, Ricky. Not if you had asked me, like, right now on the spot. I would have just been like, Eric Karros again.
yeah.
But giving me a little bit, I probably would have gotten those 2. No way I was going to get Boog or Zolio. The last 2 parts are for both of us. Will Betts become the 2nd player to win MVPs in both leagues? And will another Dodger win an MVP before Betts?
Okay, so I'm going to say yes. Does he mean this year?
Not necessarily.
Okay, so I mean, because, yeah, I think yes. I think he's going to win an MVP.
I don't know if there's going to be an MVP this year, Eric.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think yes that he will win an NL MVP to go with his AL MVP, and I don't think another Dodger will win MVP before him.
Excuse me. I'm going to go yes, but he's going to do so after Corey Seager wins in 2021.
Whoa. There okay. Well, so about Corey Seager going into free agency as the MVP. I like it. I'm writing this down because I don't have the other our normal sheet open with our open bets, but bets, get it. Let's see. Bets, MVP, yes. And then I say Bets, you say Seager. Okay, we're good.
All right. So next up. Next question. How many times will Joe Davis or Oral Hershiser say Bane or Can on Tuesday?
Oh, man.
That's a duo that I trust to make good lighthearted jabs, but also keep it professional. So I'm not sure what direction they'll go in.
I think I feel good saying four.
Okay. So if I set the over-under at 4.5.
Yeah.
What are you taking? You have to write this down, too.
I'll go under.
I'll take over.
So under 4.5, bang, can. This is one of the rare ones.
I really hope more than half of these, like three or four of these, are like subtle. Like they're not just saying can gate or bang gate or whatever. It's like when a home run go bang.
What if at some point they, you know, like Oral and Joe like will occasionally go into rap lyrics together. what if they start singing CNC Music Factory on the air and then they just say, you know, they just start saying bang because it's part of the song. And then does that count? I think it still counts.
Okay. Anything like that, it counts. So.
Nice.
The July edition of this question, name the 8 teams that will make the playoffs for 8 League. No, I'm not doing this. Do you want to do this?
Yeah.
It's
so,
half the league.
So we joked about this. So as of right now, there are 6 2-1 teams, or I guess I'm not counting the Monday games. There's been a couple day games, but there were 6 2-1 teams, and the Dodgers and Giants were both 2-2. So those were the 8. I don't think it's going to end up that way. But, okay, I'm just going to eyeball this. Dodgers, Braves, Reds, and then I'm just going to go back because it's the second place in each one. So I think Diamondbacks, Diamondbacks, Nationals. This is hard. Cubs.
Yeah.
And then Padres.
Padres.
And it's either Mets or Phillies. I think Phillies.
All right.
Yeah.
No Brewers. All right.
Nope.
All right. I'm not doing the AL.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I forgot. I'll do the AL. Just okay. To do it. So,
New York.
Yeah, Yankees, Rays, Twins, Indians, A's, Astros. That's the cop out easy. The Angels are weird. I'll go with them as one of the 8. So they're one of the third place teams. And let's go with the Rangers. It's going to be wrong, but whatever.
Which one of these things are you more likely to do first? A, wear a necktie in public.
Nope.
B, ride in public transportation, including Uber or Lyft. Or C, see a movie in the theaters. I am more likely to wear a necktie while like walking my dog than either of those two in the very immediate, short-term, medium-term future.
Yeah, so this is a weird question. So my default, I think, would normally on this be see a movie, but like that's not happening until 2021.
Seems like the worst.
Yeah, like
for you to go, you're tempted to take your mask off to eat. It's lots of circulated air. You're in there for a while.
Yeah, so that's like a down the road thing. But man, I don't remember the last. I think I wore a tie at my niece's wedding in like 2014. And that's probably the last time I wore a tie. But the only thing is like this is, you know, the industry is so weird and like who knows what's going to happen with sports. And like, I guess the only way I would wear a tie, even if it's via Zoom, is if I lose my job and am forced to like do job interviews. And even then, I don't think there's going to be necessarily a lot of, there could be ties, but I would imagine that's when I'll wear a tie. And like, I hope that doesn't come up before I get to go see a movie. But like, I think I'm going to go movie theater. I don't know. I guess if I was going to use like Uber or Lyft or take the bus or whatever, it would be to go drinking. And so I wouldn't have to drive, and I'm not going to go to a bar like anytime soon. So that's not happening. So I think we're at like, So technically, like if I went to rent a car, so I live by myself, so I usually get the ride. They pick me up, and depending on the company, they send a Lyft or an Uber to like pick you up rather than use themselves. So I guess that might be the loophole, but yeah, you know what? I'll go with that. I'll go with the public transportation.
This is tough. He did say he's counting drive-in movie theaters, and the first 4K drive-in movie theater, one of the best in the country, is in Kansas City. And my wife does love going to it. Now, that said, with the baby, keeping her not crying for 2 hours sounds like a tall, tall order. So, I generally like ties, so I'm going to probably find an excuse to do so before that happens.
I can see that.
Do recent events, me having a kid, you having to cover early evening games, affect how we are doing our daily meal prep and meal times generally? And let me tell you, I'll start. Yes. Oh my God. We have no time.
I don't even. Yeah. How do you?
I mean, so we do, and we're learning a little bit, but it's definitely prior. You know, we would make a lot of our own meals and make meals for each other. But when it was like a shared meal, generally Melissa was doing like 3-to-1 cooking, just because it's a hobby of hers. She really enjoys doing it. That's more than inverted. I'm doing almost all of the cooking. Melissa did make dinner tonight and last night, actually. But those were, I think, the first time, two times she's really cooked since the baby's come out. And that's just because she is needed with the baby way more than I am. So I'm the free one. So I'm doing a lot more cooking. We have to do way less elaborate cooking. We're not really doing meals. We're doing like a dish, maybe we can prep, but otherwise we just don't have the time, both to make it and to clean it up. So we're hoping that sort of normalizes now that we're hitting a bit of a routine starting kind of last week. So maybe going into August, we'll have a little bit more of that, a little more even share. Just because I know Melissa misses cooking. We'll see.
I would say for me, like, for the most part, for like, since like the end of the World Series last year, my schedule was almost completely Monday through Friday, like 9 to 5 for like 8.5 months. I got into a little bit of a routine in that way. Like, not, you know, I wouldn't. Not that I was, you know, sticking to certain times, but it was just easier to, like, you know, do meals or plan dinners or making them and stuff. Now it's like just like finding time to, like, you know, go eat something. Like, sometimes there'll be, if it's like the day before a game and like a bunch of news happens, like, oh, so the day of the Mookie Betts trade, that was like supposed to be the sort of calm before the storm day before opening day. I was just finishing some stuff. So, like, I don't know. It was, like, and then, like, all this news happened. And then next thing I know, I'm, like, 3 hours in and I haven't eaten anything. Like, you know, it's, I think I just get lost in that. And so time is, like, more fluid now for me. So, like, I'll eat at weird times. I think yesterday I ate breakfast at, like, 11 a.m., and I was up like at 7, you know, and I just like didn't get around to it. So, like, I don't know. It was just weird. I will point out that give Craig credit here. He typed his question out and he said, you know, because the question's for both of us. And he said, Jacob and his wife, and then in parentheses, in quotes, he put wife. Like, he was expecting me. He was teeing me up and and root the line for me to go, my wife. But yep. Like, I just wanted to give him credit for that. Congrats, Craig. You're awesome. We love you.
We do love you. And we love coming back to this podcast. We'll see if we have to go back to sort of the oddball episodes here in a few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? Like, we technically have an outbreak in baseball. It appears they're just going to keep plodding forward. We'll come back next week. Will we have another outbreak to talk about? Who knows? We'll have some games to talk about, at least, probably. So that'll be fun. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.